agenda today is item one, updating any statements of interest. Item two, approving the minutes of the last two meetings, which of 2006, which were the 6th of December in Sao Paulo, and the 21st of December, which was a teleconference. Item three is a standing item on correspondence. The only note I've received recently is from Chris Disbain, the chair of the CCNSO, informing me that he's forming a joint working group with the GAC to look at IDN issues, and that working group has asked if the GNSO would like to place an observer on that working group, and I've sort of informally said yes and asked the request on to GNSO IDN working group to identify someone. The item four is the two working groups. There's been some discussion on the mailing list on that. Item five is an update on planning for the meeting in February. So I'll get Glenn to give us an update on the details of that. Jordan's just provided a short update on where the WHOIS task force is at. And hopefully Avery will be able to give us an update on PDP Turbo 6. And then item eight is any other business. Are there any other items anyone wishes to add to the agenda? Okay, we'll go ahead with that. So does anyone have any statement of interest they'd like to update? No? Okay. Approval of the minutes. The minutes of the 6th of December and the 21st of December have both been on the mailing list for more than 7 days. Would someone like to nominate that those minutes be accepted?
Sure, I'll do that.
Okay, who's that?
Avery, sorry.
Avery, thank you, Avery. What I should do, perhaps before calling for a vote, is to just formally do a roll call to see who we have on the call and confirm that we do have a quorum.
Can I do that for you, Bruce?
That's okay. I think I've got the list.
Okay.
So I'll start with Philip Shepherd.
Philip has sent his apologies. He can't be on the call tonight.
Okay. Marilyn Cade?
Yes.
Good, Marilyn. Alistair Dixon?
Yes.
Thank you, Alistair. Chuck Jones?
Yes.
Carrie Karp?
Carrie Karp will be dialing in a bit late, but he will be on the call.
Edmund Chung?
Yep, yep.
Thank you, Edmund. Tony Harris? Have you heard from Tony then?
No, I've heard nothing from Tony. Neither from Tony Holmes.
Okay. Tony Holmes not on the call. Greg Ruth?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, Greg. Robin Gross?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Robin. Norbert Cologne?
I haven't heard anything from Norbert, but sometimes the weather is a problem for him.
Okay. Mwaki Chango?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Mwaki. Ross Rader? Is Ross Rader there?
I've heard nothing from Ross.
Okay. Tom Keller?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you, Tom. Bruce Tonkin is here. Uta Decker?
Uta will be about 20 minutes late. She's her flight was delayed.
Okay. Kyoshi Zuru?
I've heard nothing from Kyoshi.
Okay. Christina Rosette?
Yes.
Thank you, Christina. John Dean?
Yes.
Thank you, John. Avery Doria?
Yep.
Thank you, Avery. Sophia Bekele?
Excuse me, Ross Rader joins.
Welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Bruce.
Is Sophia Bekele there?
I've heard nothing from Sophia either, Bruce.
Okay. Now, in terms of our liaisons, so we have Alan Greenberg. And Suzanne Sen. No, okay. So as a staff, we have Glenn. Do we have Liz Williams? Thank you, Liz. Do we have Denise Michelle?
Yep, Denise is here.
Thank you. Maria Farrell?
I think she's on the call, Bruce.
Mute. Yep, Olaf Nordling?
Aye, aye, present.
Sorry, it's Maria, I'm here.
Yep, thanks, Maria. And I believe, I think we've got Rita Rogan as an observer, is that right?
I'm here.
Okay, is anyone else I've missed?
And yep. Sue Johncliffe and Don Jeffrey from the General Counsel's Office.
Okay, thank you.
And also Bruce Craig Schwartz is here.
Oh, okay, thank you, Craig. Okay, so we have a full staff contingent. Okay, so just coming back to the minutes, Avery proposed that the minutes of the 6th of December and 5th of December were accepted. Would all those in favour please say aye?
Aye.
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 Any against?
Bruce, just one extension on December 6th. I wasn't on the council then, so...
Okay, an extension from Chuck Gomes, 1st of December the 6th.
Yes, yeah, that's probably true for John Bing as well.
Okay.
Same here with Edmund.
Okay. Any other extensions?
Yes, Bruce, I was not on that call.
Which call was that, Milwaukee?
I saw you adopting the minutes of the previous GNS call.
Yep, okay. Thank you. Any other objections? Okay, we'll note both of those minutes passed. Item 4, which is the two working group proposals. The first proposal is on the topic of the creation or editing of a reserved word list. Would either Marilyn or Chuck like to introduce that topic?
Chuck, would you like to?
I'm game if you want me to.
Great.
Again, apologies that we sent a revision within the last 24 hours, but we thought that it was a cleaner version and a little clearer. So hopefully you've got a chance to look at that. It contains a lot of the same information that was in the first version. It's just organized a little bit differently, and we tried to make it clearer what the tasks of the work group would be. Does anybody need me to review it, or is it sufficient to just open it up for questions?
I think it might be useful if you just run through it briefly, Chuck, for those that may not have read it recently.
Okay.
Read the latest version.
All righty. Well, and the latest version did have something a little bit different in voting, and some of that was in response to some of the comments that were seen early on after the first version was posted. Essentially, the idea of emphasizing a rough consensus approach is a key. And with efforts to try and reach positions that most, if not all, of the group members are willing to support, rather than just voting on every issue. As far as how many votes, what is contained here is that it's not necessary for every constituency to have the same number of members. They would get, each constituency would get 3 votes regardless of how many members they had. And each NomCom counselor would have 1 vote, and liaisons would be non-voting. That's the proposal in this statement of work. As far as membership, I think that's pretty similar, and Marilyn, feel free to jump in if I miss something here.
Okay.
Certainly open for membership to counselors and to GNSO constituency members. Advisory committees could support appoint non-voting liaisons, and members can be added by the constituencies and advisory groups at any time during the working group. CCNSO could be invited to have a representative as an observer, and the It's emphasized in the statement of work that, you know, every effort should be made to try and consider varying points of view on the key issues, and that those are examined carefully. If that goal is achieved and recommendations are developed through rough consensus, then the full council, of course, would have opportunity to act on any recommendations that are made. Members who are selected should be willing to commit to enough time during the next 3 to 4 months to facilitate achievement of the outlined tasks. And then we recommend here that the council appoint an initial or interim chair or co-chairs, and then the working group, once it's formed, should, in its initial meeting, elect or confirm the chair or co-chairs. That was done for just efficiency so that it could get moving relatively quickly. The working timeline, it's suggested in the statement of work that there be a progress report in the upcoming in-person meetings in Marina Del Rey the end of February, that written recommendations for the next steps forward be given to the council at least 1 week prior to the Lisbon meetings, and that follow-up actions requested by the council within 30 days after the Lisbon meeting. And then it's recommended also that the working group should coordinate with the December 05 PDP committee and the February 06 PDP task force and the council as appropriate there. Purpose of the working group would be to perform an initial examination of the role and treatment of reserve names at the first and second level, with the goal of providing recommendations for further consideration by the task force or council. An important thing is that the group, we believe, should focus initially on defining the role of reserve strings and how to proceed with an examination of issues and possible policy recommendations. That would include prioritizing sub-elements of the broad topic of reserve names that might help breaking the broad topic into smaller parts that could be divided into separate policy efforts of a more manageable size, and that might also allow some less complicated issues to be resolved in a more timely manner and maybe then be a part of the introduction of new TLDs. It is pointed out that the existence of the treatment of reserve names is a matter of contract in the registry agreements, and as such, it comes into play with both the PDPs that were already referenced. Working group, section 3 of the statement of work talks about work group responsibilities, tasks, and even provides a proposed working approach. And work group responsibilities there would include, but don't need to be limited to, review present treatment and process for reservation of names at all levels. And then there's a link, there's a reference there to the appendices in the agreement. Number 2 is the review of any other discussions to date on this topic, including IDN GTLDs. Number 3 is review any ICANN staff reports related to reserve names. More details provided in the background section of the statement of work on that item. Number 4, review any technical documents. And again, there are some listed in the background section. Number 5 is to liaise with the ICANN staff as needed, including legal and operational, to review any work that's been done there. And there has some been done, as I think everybody's aware. And then number 6 would be to liaise with the CCNSO and CCTLD community in general as needed regarding the two-letter names and names issues, including whether the present approach is sufficient or necessary. Then the second part of Roman numeral 3, then, is the proposed working approach. Number two, estimate the complexity of issues associated with each sub-element and briefly describe the elements of complexity. For example, controversial issues involving multi-stakeholder groups, GAC-related issues, etc. Number three, prioritize the sub-elements according to two factors, or more than that if others are identified. The first one being estimated level of complexity, rating them from less complex to higher. Number two, importance and relevance to complete any future policy work prior to the introduction of new TLDs. And then, as I indicated, any others that the working group or even this council could decide to add to that. Number four, identify any sub-elements for which any new policy work may be able to be completed in time for the introduction of new TLDs, and develop recommendations about how that might best be accomplished, and recommendations developed there. Number five, identify the remaining sub-elements and establish a working plan to address these, including considering parallel work tracks, if feasible, as resource permit versus sequential work. And number six, prepare and submit an interim report to the relevant PDP group and or council so that any policy work needed could start as soon as possible, referencing the timeline provided by council. And then number seven in the work approach, and the last item that's listed there, is prepare and submit a final report regarding all of the above for both PDP groups and the council upon conclusion of work. And then it's added that regular progress report should be provided to the PDP groups and the council. Section 4, Roman numeral 4 of the statement of work then gives some examples of topics for reserve names and an example of a plan outline for the working group. And that's not intended to be comprehensive or prescriptive, but hopefully as an aid to the working group. Number one there is to identify possible roles and purposes for reserve names at the top level and review and examine these roles and purposes, including how to address the role of reserve names and IDNs. Number two, identify and develop proposals to address any policy issues that should be or are under consideration by the existing GNSO PDPs regarding policy considerations related to the role, use, reservation, and release and allocation of reserve names at the top and second level. Number three is to determine five things. Number one, the various roles that reserve names play in new GTLDs. In addressing controversial categories of names, including whether trademark names and country geopolitical names should have initial or permanent reserve status. In that regard, let me just add a comment. The existing registry agreements have a lot of similarities in terms of reserve names, but there are some differences with regard to geopolitical names. So that's important to realize. The second thing to determine would be whether existing reserve names at the second level should automatically be included at the first level. The third one, whether there is a different treatment proposed for existing reserve names at the second level in the first level. And again, just a side comment there. In the agreement, the list of reserve names in the existing agreement, there are some names that are reserved at both levels already, some that are reserved just at the second level. That's just a point of information for everybody that may not know that. The fourth thing to determine would be whether reserve name requirements need to be the same for all GTLDs, and if not, which ones might vary. The fifth, whether there should be a procedure by which staff publishes new categories of reserve names before adding them to registry agreements. Item four, then, under the suggested the example work plan, would be to discuss and review processes by which names could be put into reserve status at the top level. Five, discuss and propose processes by which names can be unreserved at the top level and made available for allocation. allocation, including discussion of whether there are unique treatments and allocation for names that are reserved. 6, discuss whether and how categories of names can be unreserved and allocated at the second level, and it goes on like the previous one. 7, reconfirm whether there should be a process by which new names or categories are added to the reserve status in the second level. For example, should we assume that all new strings allocated for operation as registries are reserved at the second level when they are awarded? Unless people want me to, I won't go over the background materials that are submitted there. There's also some additional considerations in Attachment 1 that where it's a summary of the conditions that warrant the policy development. Any questions or comments?
Okay, I can take a cue on this. Who'd like to comment on that statement of work?
I wouldn't mind asking a couple questions, Bruce.
Sure. I've got Ross Rader. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Ross.
I believe I missed the last discussion on this particular topic, so forgive me if this sounds like a left-field question that's not informed by prior discussion, but I'm sort of lost as to what the motivation is behind this and why we would be using a sort of an ad hoc process as described here versus the existing policy development process.
I think actually, Bruce, we probably should just then review, it's Marilyn, we probably should review the fact that we did have an extensive discussion about this on the last council call, and the statement of work is in response to that discussion. So do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that discussion before, because Chuck and I think, would be should follow you in talking about the role of working group versus, because, you know, we're using a working group in IDN, for instance, which will feed into a policy process, but maybe you might talk a little bit about your view of the role of working groups?
Yeah, I think my comment on in response to your question, Ross, was that we have policy development processes like the new GTLD process, and some of the comments are quite high level. So we have a current policy statement that there should be a reserved names list, and the sorts of reserved names that were identified were things like names that could cause a technical problem, and some names are reserved through RFCs. And so it provides some certainty for applicants if it's clear that these are some names you definitely can't have, and here's some other names that you may have that could be subject to challenge and so forth. So ultimately it would then be a staff implementation issue to sort of come sit down and review the current reserve lists and create a reserve list as part of the RFP. So I had thought it would be useful to see if we can have a discussion with the community to see if any consensus might arise around that topic, and that this working group was produced in response to that, similar to the motivation for IDNs, because obviously there's a lot of work going on in IDNs. At the new GTLD policy level, we've attempted to capture what we know about IDNs in terms of policy, and that's pretty much to say that most of the recommendations we have, we currently believe, apply to IDNs, but there may be some issues we haven't thought of, and so we've asked a working group to attempt to identify what those policy issues would be, and if there are some policy issues, then we take them up as part of the policy development process. So I see a working group as not a policy group. It's a group to examine a topic, identify areas where consensus may arise with respect to a particular policy, but if we were to create a policy, we wouldn't be using the working group to create a policy. The policy would then come back into a PDP process. At this stage, the policy is that there will be a reserved names list,
Bruce,
as far as the GTLD committee.
So the question there then, Bruce, would be the obvious one. Why would we go to such lengths to really replicate the existing process surrounding the creation of issues reports? Is this, and I understand the analogy that you've made as it relates to the IDN working groups, and with an issue of that scope and scale, that, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think anybody would be hard-pressed to make the argument that this is an issue of similar scope and scale or of importance So it just seems to me like we're going to an awful lot of make work around something that we could easily address through the creation of an issues report.
I think there has been some issues identified, Ross, and I think what we're trying to do, one of the mistakes I think we make with issues reports is we end up with a report that pretty much looks like this statement that's already been written, like here's a list of topics that are interesting, as opposed to here's some area where there's emerging consensus around that's worth taking forward. Because what ends up happening is you end up with a 2 or 3 page issues report, and then you spend the next 12 months arguing about what you could even agree on, and then the next 12 months trying to refine those topics. So rather than have a very heavyweight process that can go on forever, my intent here is that these are quite short-term work items. They sort of operate for 3 months, the group identifies where they're the points where there seems to be agreement, and then if there's something that is getting agreement, then we can take it into the council and the policy development process and hopefully have a fairly fast-track process to agree on it.
So Bruce, could I add just a brief thing to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Ross, I also think, too, that you could just as well look at this statement of work as an issues report. It may not meet the exact criteria as in the PDP process, but it certainly does lay out some issues for discussion.
And part of it is to try and get as much work done as possible, Ross, on some of these topics, whether it's IDNs, whether it's reserved words, so that when the board signs off on the policy, we are ready to go with very short order and RFP, because otherwise what will happen is we'll have all these general statements like, you know, staff needs to do this, staff needs to do that, and then what's the staff going to do? They'll probably end up forming a working group and doing the very very same thing, which will take another 3 to 6 months.
Right, I understand. Okay, I've probably got a couple more questions, but I'll certainly stop asking them for now.
Bruce, can I ask one question?
Who's that, Avery?
This is Avery, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that's when it was basically the December 05 PDP process that had the list to be created and basically made the, sort of initiated the discussion about putting together a working group to do this for the top level domains. Now, I understand that there is a lot of really good issues that need to be discussed about second-level domain names, but how did that actually become part of this particular proposal?
I think
Bruce, can I just offer a clarification for everybody to understand? You made the point, it's Marilyn, but it sometimes isn't clear that actually given that there is an existing list of reserved names at both the first level and the second level in all generic TLDs, although there are some variances in them, but there is a set of names that are reserved today at the top level and at the second level in all existing TLDs. So, Aubrey, you know, I just want to be, sometimes I think that is a little unclear, and maybe we didn't make that clear enough?
No, but I understand
okay.
That there's an existing list,
okay.
But the list for the new GTLD is not necessarily that same list. That's just most definitely
list. Yeah, so can I answer that question, Avery?
Mm-hmm.
There, if we're just looking going forward for a second and don't think about going back, okay? In other words, not worrying about existing TLDs, we're talking about new GTLDs. There are two aspects of that, of a new GTLD. One is what string is it allowed to have at the top level, and the second aspect is what are the contractual conditions with regard to what happens within that TLD. So where it comes into the second level is that if a new GTLD is created, so dot example is created, then the question is, are there rules about what names can occur at the second level of dot example? So that's the context where I see it in new GTLDs. It's both what happens at the top level and what happens at the second level for new GTLDs.
Okay. And then it would only pertain to existing GTLDs by reference to the fact that if new GTLDs have different rules, then one has to look at existing. I understand. Okay.
That's the flow, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But Bruce, it's Marilyn. I, you know, I... I think I thought I said essentially what you said, so I'm glad you said it more clearly. But I think also there was a point that Chuck made, and that is that there are some variances in, so if you look at Annex 6, there will be some differences, not necessarily major differences, but there'll be some differences in the reserve annex, if I might call it that, just for because it's not necessarily Annex 6 and all the TLDs. There'll be some slight variances in the existing TLDs. So one of the questions that we tried to ask was, is that possible to have some variances? And it may be great justification for those variances existing in certain categories, but in other categories, and I'm going to use a couple of examples that seem very logical, all GTLDs undoubtedly are going to need to reserve .IANA, .ICANN, .example, et cetera, while some new GTLDs might actually have a little bit of uniqueness in some other names. Geopolitical names are not necessarily treated exactly the same in all of the existing GTLDs. It's a question to ask, is that necessary to treat them all the same, or can there be variances in new GTLDs as there are in the existing?
Okay. Anyone else want to ask a question or speak to this topic? Okay.
Bruce, I'll just add one other comment that came in from the registries. Another variance that occurs in the list of reserve names in registry agreements is that some registries have a list of unique reserve names for their TLD for various reasons, and you can look those at those various ones. .mobi is an example of that. I think .iaero has some special ones like that. And I don't think there's any intent to mess with those or change those or even going forward. I think Marilyn said it pretty well that, you know, certain TLDs may have certain requirements, and I don't think there's any motive to be overly prescriptive in this regard. And maybe not even deal with those unique situations, but rather the ones that are in common.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth pointing out, perhaps historically, that if you compare the perhaps the evolution of TLDs, if you started with Common Net, it had very few reserved words. I think there were some initial 7 swear words at some point.
And then you had
Biz that came along with very few restrictions. .info ended up with some restrictions related to geopolitical names. And then after that, in the more recent rounds, some of the geopolitical name stuff, I think, has tended to almost become standardised. But I don't think there's ever really been any kind of broader GNSO discussion about whether that should be in there or not. And that's an example of something where I think if we just sort of leave it to a sort of staff process, it's going to end up being things that happen step by step without it ever really being more broadly discussed, I think.
So for my clarification, Bruce, if I may.
Yes, go ahead, Ross.
Thank you. The focus of this group will be to produce some path forward for the community, or to outline what the path forward is for the community as it relates to new GTLDs and the reserve names, as it relates to reserve names in new GTLDs. Is that correct?
Bruce, the document, Ross, addresses that as, it actually addresses under purpose an initial examination of the role and treatment of reserve names at the first and second level, but it isn't restricted to new TLDs in the purpose. It goes on later in the document to suggest that there prioritization needs to be done, and that there's recognizes the need to address the priority of the new GTLD.
Yeah, let me answer that slightly differently, I think, Ross, just from my point of view. I think we need to sort of understand the context here, and I think and I it probably comes into some various legal issues, but I suspect the existing TLDs is a little more complicated, that it's probably going to need the cooperation of the current registry operator to sort of agree with whatever recommendation someone might have, because in other words, that's an agreement between two parties, ICANN and that registry operator. So my suspicion is it's going to be easier to take things off the list rather than add things to that particular list, given that existing contractual arrangement. So from a policy point of view, I think we should be saying this is what we think the right policy is, and then how that might get implemented in existing TLDs, because the existing operator might say, oh, that no longer needs to be a reserved word. We think that's a good idea. Please take, we'd like ICANN to take it off our list. Whereas if someone said, hey, we've got these, you know, 200,000 new reserved words, I would imagine most existing registry operators would say, well, one, most of them are already allocated to people, and two, we're not that keen on increasing the list we've already got. So I think that's more likely to be a contractual discussion, whereas looking forward, we're looking at green fields.
Is there any way to make that clearer in this document? Because one of the things that I'd like to do is to make sure that this is tight. In terms of bounding the scope of work and the duration of work that the group is going to be engaged in, I think the last thing we need is another open-ended working group / task force. And I suspect that this has some of the attributes and features that would lead to that sort of a situation.
Bruce, could I just follow up on what Ross is saying there? Ross, again, we may not have accomplished it effectively enough, but what you're saying there is one of the reasons why we turned around that last, the second version in the last 24 hours, because it didn't seem to be tight enough. But so just wanted to let you know that. And I'm not saying we're tight enough now, but I'm not saying one way or another on that, but that was exactly why we did another version.
Right, right.
And Ross, I think also we tried to time bound it and note that it needs to report into the relevant task force or council.
Yeah, I think if you look at the purpose, it's basically saying we'll perform an initial examination of the role and treatment of reserve names at both the first and the second level. And part of that's probably looking historic to see how they've been treated in the past. And then the working group will focus on defining the role of those strings and how to proceed with a full examination, and then a recommendation for further consideration by the council. So the council could say, okay, you guys have obviously reached a fairly good degree of rough consensus, as Chuck has defined earlier in the document, around defining what the role of reserve strings are. There's also a rough consensus around some strings that really should be reserved. And then there's a whole bunch of other areas where no consensus could be reached around a whole range of different types of potential reserve strings. So that's probably what I would imagine would be an outcome in 2 months' time. So this isn't something that will last for 3 years, because I think we'd only take forward those areas where there seems to be some rough consensus after 2 months. If you haven't reached rough consensus after 2 months, you're probably getting into the topic areas where, you know, they may well take years, because you'll never get agreement on them.
If that's the case, then we may want to be explicit about the bounding, the time bounding of the or the lifespan of the working group. In other words, this working group will dissolve 30 days after Lisbon, et cetera.
Yeah, I tend to prefer that, because we can always restart it at the council level, but I think it's good to have a starting point and setting an expectation among the members of the working group that this is a defined period.
Maybe I would suggest, you know, we use the phrase 3 to 4 months because we wanted to make a report into the initial, the intersessional, and then make a final report, and then do any work that the council assigned in Lisbon. And I thought we were kind of building that in. It might be that we could just add that at the time of the report at the international meeting, council would affirm the next stage of the work, and then you know, it may be completed in Lisbon, and the council might not give any more work back to the group.
Well, we kind of have an outside edge or alternative, I think, Ross, like you're suggesting, when we say provide any follow-up actions requested by the council within 30 days after the Lisbon meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want it more definitive than that.
So it says now provide any follow-up action, and it could say as directed by council, which would mean...
I just had a question. Isn't Ross's objective achieved by 2, which is deliver written recommendations for next steps at least 1 week prior to the start of the Lisbon ICANN meeting?
Can it be perhaps defined a little more tightly there? Because I guess it doesn't explicitly define an endpoint, Alistair, so maybe it might be asked that the working group in item 2, the working group to complete its work on written recommendations for next steps forward to the council. So there's some...
Okay, Bruce, you could say complete work, and deliver written any end-to-end and deliver any written recommendations to the GNSO Council at least 1 week prior to the start of the Lisbon ICANN meeting for consideration in the Council's work, and put a period after.
Yeah, and I'll probably just delete 3 for the moment, because the Council can direct that at Lisbon if it wants the working group to sort of convene to address some issues that the Council might raise.
Yeah, I would just say that 2 probably needs to say for consideration by any relevant task force / Council, because if the recommendations are affecting PDP 05, I think we would all want after all, it is the Council as a whole, but I think the point is we want we're making the report, we want it to be considered by whoever needs to consider it.
Now, Bruce, with regard to your suggestion to delete number 3, I don't have a big problem with that, but I do think it's useful in this to add a statement that the council could do that. And the reason I'm saying that is we're asking whoever would participate in this working group to commit to be able to do it, and it's probably helpful if they know right up front. If they think it's going to definitely end on at Lisbon, and it may not, I think that's setting expectations that we may not want.
Yeah, so you might have something along the lines of that the council may request follow-up actions for the working group within 30 days after the Lisbon meeting,
That's what I'm saying.
I think we can sort of play with some of these words after the call, but I think it's just getting the concepts right, that there's a concept that the working group completes its work 1 week prior to Lisbon, but the council may request and follow up within 30 days. So it's just basically, as you say, putting people on notice that there might be some small amounts of follow-up work. Okay, any other comments? Okay, would someone like to propose then that this statement of work be approved?
I'll propose it. It's Alistair.
Thank you, Alistair. Do we have a seconder? Hopefully Chuck or Marilyn might second it.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Chuck.
If somebody else wanted to do it.
Okay. So, all those in favour, please say aye.
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 Are there any against?
I'd like to vote against, Bruce, please.
Okay, thank you, Ross. Are there any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that motion is passed. The next topic, then, is the topic of Sunrise. And I guess this is not something, this is a little different to the previous working group in the sense that I don't believe we currently have any recommendation in the new GTLD report about the need for a Sunrise, but there certainly has been discussion within the committee about what happens if there's lots of new GTLDs and how would the start-up phase work, and would there be IP, is there mechanisms for protecting the trademark holders, etc. So I did think it was worth having a working group to spend a bit more time on that topic to see if there is some agreement before we pull it back into the new GTLD work. So, Christine, would you like to just introduce this document that you've put forward?
Sure. And Uta, I believe you're on as well, so feel free to jump in as you'd like. We started off, and as you can see, we've really focused more at least on outlining and trying to flesh out and get some consensus as to what the statement of work should consist of before kind of doing a more elaborate, fully written statement, such as Marilyn and Chuck's. But we really started from the purpose that was described in the last meeting and went from there. I will say that based on the comments that we have received, it appears that there may have been some misunderstanding as to what we intended the scope of the purpose to be. And in particular, it was clear that some understood the purpose to essentially be limited to just an examination of Sunrise itself and not some of the alternative mechanisms that have been used, for example, IP claims. And we certainly do not want to limit the purpose to just an examination of Sunrise, and we fully intended the alternative processes phrase to encompass those alternative mechanisms, which may be broader than simply just the IP claim process that's been used before. We're certainly open to considering what else might be out there. In terms of the proposed purpose, we had identified it as analyze the processes used to allow owners of trademark and analogous intellectual property rights to register before the land rush or general public registration period domain names corresponding to such rights, and we defined those processes as Sunrise processes, identify commonalities among such Sunrise processes, assess the feasibility of developing and implementing a Sunrise process that is scalable for new GTLD, and identify and evaluate alternative processes. And just based on some of the comments that we've received, we would at this point certainly make a few revisions to that, one of the first of which, just going in order of where they would fit in, is Edmund's suggestion, excellent suggestion, that we use prior rights instead of analogous intellectual property rights. So the first phrase would read it, and I apologize because I'm going to lose my voice in a minute. Analyze processes used to allow owners of trademark and prior rights. The next comment that we thought fit well into the statement of the proposed purpose is Chuck's suggestion that we also focus on the variables with regard to the phrase that talks about identifying commonalities, that we also focus on some of the variables. One other suggestion that we wanted to put forth is to alleviate what appears to be some concern that the statement is too focused on Sunrise as opposed to other mechanisms, that what we would do is really kind of switch the last two phrases within the proposed purpose so that we would identify and evaluate alternative processes and then have assessed the feasibility of developing and implementing a Sunrise process or alternative process that is scalable for new GTLDs as a way to just kind of encompass all of the concerns and make sure that in terms of identifying what's feasible and scalable, we would be taking into account all of the various mechanisms that were out there. So before I go forward, does anyone have any questions?
I have one question, Christine, if Marilyn.
Sure.
Chuck and I had added a parenthetical just to make sure that it was clear that we understood that BDP-05 actually encompasses that, you know, since new GTLDs encompass Latin character and non-Latin character, did you guys assume you would be examining the implications for an approach to deal with the trademark and prior rights for both categories of new GTLDs?
To be perfectly honest with you, we hadn't really focused on it in terms of making a distinction.
Okay.
Mr. Sauber, can I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead, Emily.
One of the things that had struck me when I was reading it was the overwhelming and sort of a priori decision that there were indeed a known set of rights that needed to be protected from essentially the rest of the world, and that this would probably extend even into IDN spaces. And I think that presumption itself, which is forming a priori basis for this, even when you say, okay, perhaps not Sunrise, but mechanisms in general, needs to be protected. So I'm wondering whether there is any intention to actually explore the notion of the right.
Morning.
In terms of just as an overwhelming concept, or as opposed to how it would apply within the context of each process that's been used. I'm not sure I understand.
I think that the presumption is that in the establishment of new GTLDs, there is a right to intellectual property holders / prior rights holders, and that presumption pertains to all possible new GTLDs. And I'm basically asking, is there any intention to actually look at whether such a right does indeed exist, and whether there are counter rights to that that would affect what mechanisms would be acceptable?
Uta, feel free to jump in, because I wasn't involved in some of the discussions and deliberations leading, involved with the 05 PDP. But it's my understanding that no, not in the very broad sense of are we going to protect intellectual property rights, in part because, first off, all of the new GTLD applications that I have looked at have had, the mechanism for protecting prior rights, and also because we had not, at least the IPC had not, really focused on, we hadn't pushed as hard for Sunrise because it had been our understanding, hope, and goal that the new GTLDs that would be coming out of the new process would be more along the lines of sponsored, tightly defined communities where you wouldn't have as much of a need. Now, obviously, when you get into who is eligible for Sunrise and who isn't, you are, to a certain extent, getting into who has a right that can be protected and who doesn't. So to the extent that your question was focusing on that part of it, then absolutely we're going to be looking at that.
Bruce, this is Chuck, if I could add a comment here.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Christina and Uta, one of the things, as I know you saw in the suggested edits I edited, it seems to me that it's really important for the statement of work to identify the problems that whatever processes are used or have been used, whether it be Sunrise or some other mechanism, that those problems be identified, and then that becomes the basis then for evaluating their and analyzing both their quantitative and qualitative success, as well as a measuring point for any alternatives that might be proposed in the future.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, one of the very first things I was going to say once we moved into the suggested outline for the work plan was that we had essentially intended to adopt and incorporate all of your suggestions, including, specifically that you need to identify what the problem is that the processes, regardless of whether they're Sunrise or alternative, have been intended to address.
Thanks.
Okay, can I ask a question again? So it seems, though, like we've got the solution before we've got the requirement. We sort of say, we've got these sets of solutions, now what are the requirements for those? Is that correct?
Can you clarify what you mean by requirements, or do you mean before we've stated what the problems are? Or it's the same?
Yeah, stating the problems form the requirements. But basically we're saying we've got a set of solutions, and what we're looking for are what are the problems that these solutions will solve for us.
Can I ask you a question? So under proposed purpose, is a possible suggestion that the there be a clear couple of sentences there that define what the problem is. I'm not at this point saying, you know, it's an agreed the problem, but is that what you're looking for? It would be like the statement of the problem.
Yeah. And because in perhaps defining, I mean, in defining the problem, we define all the interested parties in the definition of the problem, and we may find out that the problem as defined by one set of interested parties is totally the opposite of mm-hmm. the problem defined by another set of mm-hmm. interested parties that are all part of our community. And so understanding the problem before okay. we've accepted the possible solutions seems sort of a normal engineering way to go about it. Just to be a little geeky about it.
I guess if we compare it with the previous statement of work, that started with first defining the role of reserved names, and I guess partly what you're talking about here, Avery, is what is the role of the sunrise process?
Oh, yeah.
Another way of saying is what is the problem that the sunrise process seeks to solve?
And probably, Bruce, that, you know, I had suggested, I don't know if I did it to the listeners privately, that I agree we do need this a term, which is, you know, either we use sunrise in quotes or we, you know, use initial launch processes or something that isn't, that
yeah.
it's a very neutral phrase.
Basically,
yeah.
it's a privileged registration period.
Oh,
yeah,
privileged.
I think that's...
Well, I mean, in some of the WIPO reports, they've referred to preventive IP protection mechanisms, if that is language that would be, you know, more acceptable.
Well, I think we all remember where, sorry, this is Uta, we all remember how we got to discuss this working group in the first place, and I think we all know that the problem is, in a way, in a very untechnical way phrased, the problem is raised by a large number of new GTLDs coming up for intellectual property rights holders and other affected parties who might be subject to abusive registrations or other conflicts. So I think one thing that is very important to bear in mind is that there's no intention to necessarily create a process that would give trademark holders the ability to have priority in terms of getting a domain, but this is really in order to address a problem that obviously comes about with this new concept of new GTLDs. So, and that's the problem we're trying to solve, and I guess it's just a matter of phrasing it in a more accurate manner.
Hey, Bruce, can I get in the queue with Rita?
Okay, Rita, go ahead.
I'm just curious, and I think John Jeffrey's on the line. I thought that, John, in any applications for new TLDs, there was a requirement that mechanisms be addressed to protect intellectual property rights.
This is John. That's certainly correct.
But I don't know if that, you know, bears on this discussion at all, that I think, you know, any new TLDs that are out there are going to have to deal with protecting intellectual property rights. So if the scope of what you guys are trying to do is to standardize that process, that might be something, you know, that is something you might want to undertake. But I think there already is this mechanism in place to at least allege in your application as one of the application requirements that you will have some mechanisms in place to protect IP.
Well, John, could I get some? This is Chuck. Could I get some clarity on that? What do you? Certainly, there have been in the rounds that have gone on so far. But does that necessarily mean that requirement is there going forward? And where does that come from?
Yeah, and I think this discussion is a good discussion because that those issues are issues that could and should be pointed out as things that are important to the community and things that could be included or continue to be included in future rounds. So I think the conversation is relevant. I think Rita's point is right that it would be natural for us to include those kinds of provisions and certainly to require that all appropriate laws are followed.
What appropriate laws?
Well, in this case, there are likely to be intellectual property laws relating to these areas that might require some specific views or concerns relating to these registrations. I just got, did anybody hear that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I think it probably might be useful to take a cue because we've probably got a few people that want to comment, but
I'd like to ask a clarifying question. It put me in the queue.
Yeah, I've got a question for Christina as well, please.
So I've got Marilyn, I've got Ross. Anyone else? And I'll add myself after Ross because I had a couple of comments as well. Go ahead, Marilyn.
To John and Rita, and Rita, thanks for joining us on the call. And John, I thought I remembered the requirement, but I was grasping for whether I could put a source in, like Chuck and I were able, for instance, to reference existing RFCs, and Liz helped us out by gathering the not just Annex 6, but the link to the other registry agreements that have the treatment of reserved names.
Right.
Maybe a mini work item. I don't mean a big work item, but maybe a mini work item might be in this launch registration period or processes for launch in, I don't know, whatever we call it. Maybe there's room for the same kind of documents or resources or existing treatments to be included in as background material for this group as well?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, it was my intent, at least, that one of the things that we'd be looking at is not only the actual policies, but kind of reaching back to what each applicant had said in its application, in part to not only ensure that there was a match, and to the extent that we can kind of reach back farther to whatever documents or policies that led to those sections in the application. And, you know, for example, another thing that we would certainly want to look at is, I believe that Summit Strategies, I believe, did a report with regard to the new TLDs, I guess the first round of new TLDs that included some discussion of the Sunrise. So, I mean, that obviously would be, you know, an additional reference that we would want to look at. So, I mean, certainly we can do that.
Okay. Ross?
Quick question. I'm not quite sure that I'm following 100% of the conversation from the perspective of which draft we're referring to here. Was there a draft circulated after the 11th, Christina?
No.
Okay.
No. I just essentially, we had thought about trying to circulate a new draft, but we figured that, frankly, since we hadn't heard from that many people, that it might be more productive to wait until after this call.
Gotcha. So we'll see another draft, and then we'll pick this up on a future call.
That would be my intent, unless Bruce had other plans.
Great. Yeah, I think that's right, Ross. So I don't think we've got it tied down enough that I think people would feel comfortable voting on it. I'm also perhaps conscious a little bit of time, because if we don't vote on it this call, and we're talking about another call late in February, I'm wondering whether it might be useful to have a call in 2 weeks' time that just focuses on just this topic. And this is assuming, of course, that we get a fresh draft, just so that we can sort of kick some of this work off in a timely manner. My question or comment, I think, is really a question a little bit for John. I just want to clarify it. Can you just restate what the request was in the RFPs, how that was worded again?
I'd have to go back and pull those specific provisions out. It's been a long enough time that I don't have that directly in front of me, but I can certainly send that around to the council, and we can send the references to the need to comply with the laws of the contractual agreement, because anytime we enter into an agreement, we have the laws surrounding that agreement relating to the way that the agreement's formed.
Okay, I think that would be very helpful if you could circulate that. Can you just restate what you said earlier, though, just your understanding of what it says? I think you had just one sentence, something along the lines of must protect the rights of others or something. What did you say earlier?
I'm not sure exactly what I said.
Justice Kuhl, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in terms of looking at some of the other the completed applications, there was a section on, for example, protect the rights of others. So I assume that the relevant portion of the RFP would, you know, identify the mechanisms that will be used to protect the rights of others or something along those lines. And similarly, there's another section that requests detail on the assurance of charter compliant registrations and avoidance of abusive registration practices. You see, to the extent that you've seen references to Sunrise or IP claims or whatnot in these applications, you tend to see them in more than one section.
Right. So, because I guess one of the mechanisms, if I just want to confirm that this is one of the mechanisms that's in place in ICANN, if we look at .com, for example, the mechanism, as I understand it, that provides some protection or at least some mechanisms to assist in protection, is that the registration agreement for a .com name requires the registrant to agree to, comply to the outcome of a UDRP. So that's actually a contractual obligation of the registrant to submit to that process effectively. And so that's not a startup process. It just says that if I create a trademark today for a completely new word, and then somebody goes and registers that word and starts using it to infringe my trademark right, I then have this dispute resolution mechanism, which is UDRP, and the existing holder of that name by contract needs to comply with the outcomes of that UDRP. And presumably you've got a fallback of taking legal proceedings as well. But would you interpret that, John, as being one of those mechanisms?
Certainly, and those mechanisms exist in the newer agreements too. So looking away from .com at the newer agreements, we require those forms of compliance that relate to the intellectual property laws as well.
So I guess the comment I would have in terms of the way this is drafted or the purpose is that the first sentence sort of assumes that, I think picking up what Avery has said, that a trademark holder has a prior right to register a name through some process before Landrush. And some of the issues that have been pointed out to me and where this has become, I guess because this system is now known and it's been used in some of the recent launches of TLDs, including .eu, in some ways it's become gamed a bit. So people have actually put in trademark registrations through parts of the world where the process may not be as rigorous to get a trademark, often on quite generic words. So now pretty much every generic word, like a word like example or house or something, probably has a trademark somewhere. So it's been kind of used as a way to jump the gun on the more general population of registrants. So I think we just have to be aware of the side effects we've created through some of the previous processes. And then the question is what we're dealing with perhaps being a streamlined method like a UDRP method for dealing with a breach of a law, as opposed to trying to create some process in advance where we try and identify who's got a better right than someone else. So that's just something to think about. But I just wanted to I like the way John's, the way he phrased the question, which was more general, which is looking at mechanisms for protecting, let's say, IP rights or something, at a much more general statement, and then you look at some methods of that, rather than sort of pre-propose that there's some sort of start-up phase where someone has a right over someone who is only allowed to participate in a land rush phase.
Can I react to that?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll see you.
I think this is you're equaling the solution that we're looking at with Sunrise only, and I think what the working group was meant to do is to find solutions that would help alleviate the problems that IP right holders will face with all the new TLDs coming in. And it seems to me that it would be useful to think about two separate prongs of solutions. The UDRP on the one hand, which, where you can address issues that have fallen through the net. But I think it's also important to have a broad brush solution in the beginning that avoids a high number of problems coming up, because arguably trademark holders, if they have to go through UDRPs at that higher volume that we think may happen, it seems that this is going to be just too much of a problem. So we're not looking at Sunrise as the only solution, but I think it's important to have a working group that looks at a solution that as effective in avoiding trademark holders having to go through a large volume of EVRPs at a later stage.
Bruce, can I get in the queue, please?
Yep, I'll start a fresh queue, I think. So I had, that was Avery, was it?
Yeah, thanks.
Marilyn?
And Marilyn.
Anyone else? Go ahead, Avery.
Okay, yeah, I think between the comment you made, Bruce, and the one that Uta just made is where my problem was falling. I like the notion of looking at the rights for all in relation to new TLDs. And that means not just IP holders or trademark holders, however they may get a hold of their certificate, but also the rights of those who are excluded by such rights. So in terms of looking at the problem that we've got in terms of rights of all, not just, you know, IP holders who happen to have a certificate from somebody giving them a right over others. And as you explained, I think that the problem and our mechanisms have made it much bigger, and I thank you for putting it in much more clearly defined terms than I had.
Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that, you know, I know there's been some concern expressed about the VDRP or the sunrise period is only for people who have some kind of an existing right, but one of the things that I am very aware of is that if everything is locked up in an argument about how to address conflicts, and there is no process to address conflicts, then the process of introducing new GTLDs and allocating strings at the second level is going to be significantly challenging and may even harm the ability of the new registry to get off the ground. And I'll just be hypothetical, but you know, if you had a land rush of all of the famous and well-known brands, and they immediately went to court, and no names were going live in using websites, I think we would be in a situation where we could be contributing to a perception that ICANN's introduction of new GTLDs is a failure, is a chaotic.
Mm.
So I say that because I am not a trademark lawyer. There are people on the call who are, but in speaking for business users, I'm very aware that business users really don't feel they have a choice but to protect their brand in GTLDs. Whether you agree with them or not, I'm not making a comment on, but they don't feel they have a choice. That they haven't had to register in sponsored names, and that's been a big relief to them. But one thing I don't want to see happen is 10,000 famous and well-known brand holders rushing to court in every new string. That doesn't help anybody except their law firm, their outside law firm, and it also doesn't help get it doesn't help get names allocated in the new space. So that's my only concern, that whatever we, and I thought that's one of the things we were trying to do in analyzing these processes, how to be fair, how to be balanced, but also how to make sure names get allocated.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yes, perhaps from John Deng, small comment that we're not talking about trademarks, but obviously there are other types of protected strengths.
Right.
Not only proper names, but also, for instance, like we feel not being English-speaking language, that many names of public agencies, like the Ministry of Justice in Norwegian, is used as a domain name, and that certainly is maybe misleading and so on. So there are different issues than trademarks, and also the dispute resolution mechanism, the ex post mechanism, currently is perhaps not as developed as it should be under a new regime of where there is a higher volume. There may be different type of resolutions or decisions, not only within that domain, but perhaps with a more general validity or reaching over more than one domain. And that is a possibility that might also be considered, the relation between the ex ante and the ex post, preventing the dispute and resolving a dispute. And as we know, that trademarks really are limited in geographical application, what we do know may be making them even more general than perhaps necessary.
John, can I just ask you, would you just tell me again, the ministry, what was the example you gave?
Oh, there are several examples of .com domains which corresponds to public agencies in non-English language jurisdictions.
Right.
And that is rather confusing because if you do a Google, for instance, you'll end up with that domain and it has no official standing.
Thank you.
Any other comments on this topic?
Bruce, this is Uche. I was just wondering whether this is the right call to discuss timing, maybe, because I'm aware only so much time will be available for the working group to reach its goal.
That's what I'm wondering too, and that's why I'm thinking if it's going to have value, the work probably needs to start sooner than later. In other words, I think it would be useful for it to start before Lisbon, and that's why I'm wondering whether it might be useful to have a follow-up call in 2 weeks' time, just to look at a fresh draft of that of the working group to see if there's that we can get agreement from the council to go forward.
Bruce, can I call? Thanks.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, sure. I wonder if it would be possible to start formation of the work group in parallel to finalizing the statement of work, and save a little bit of time once it is approved.
Sure, I don't see why not.
Yeah, I think that's up to constituency members, but we can... So essentially what we're saying is constituencies might think about identifying some people to be members, but on standby, effectively, for if the council agrees to go forward. Is that
right?
Yeah. Okay.
And at that point, I want to be in the queue to come back to addressing the other group, Bruce.
So I've got Alistair, then Marla. Go ahead, Alistair.
And Malaki.
Sorry, Malaki.
I just had a question. This the draft statement of work doesn't identify the time frame within which it would be intended that this work would be completed. So could I just get some clarification on how long this piece of work it's intended or hopes that it would take?
Well, I think originally we had hoped to have, some results by the Lisbon meeting, but that may well not be possible if we're not going to be able to, given that it looks as if we won't even be at a point to take a vote to go forward for another 2 weeks.
I don't know whether Liz is on the call, but she might have some ideas on how the work of the working group is meant to feed into the larger picture.
Can I add a follow-up comment? I mean, I think it would be useful just to identify, just like the reserved names group, to identify a time frame for completion of the work, or at least report back to the council. I think it would be helpful.
Yeah, I think my general intent in these things is just to sort of use a sort of engineering or a project management term. I don't want to put them on the critical path in the sense that we can't move forward on other things until we finish one of these working groups. The other thing I don't want to do is have a working group that goes on too long, because I think that defeats its purpose. The intent is to have a fairly focused period of work to see if some agreement can be reached. So I would be sort of suggesting that the working group, if we were to agree to form it at our next meeting, we would probably want a report from the working group in the council meeting in the month following the Lisbon meeting, so like April or something like that. So in other words, the last
time. You want an interim report in Lisbon, right?
you could have an interim report in Lisbon, but I think I'd be trying to have the working group conclude its work, you know, in April or something like that. Yeah, just so that we're giving it sort of 2 to 3 months.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Milwaukee?
Yes. Sorry, I tried to join the queue earlier, but I was on mute. So I just wanted to press the issue or the question. Confusion about the Minister of Justice in some countries. That issue relating to the purpose actually of the Sunlight Society. I'd like to encourage the team to stress or to define clearly that purpose of the Sunrise process, and bear in mind that it's probably not only about trademarks or intellectual property holders, but some other issues, as we just saw with some comments. So it's important that we have that definition, or at least the purpose of the Sunrise process highlighted in the report. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? What do people think about the idea of having a council meeting in a fortnight's time just on this topic?
And just making it like an hour in length?
Yes. Well, hopefully less.
Right. Yeah.
A fortnight is what?
When that'll end up being. Where are we at the moment? It would be
the second.
Depending on where you are, Alistair, the second for you and me.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd be in Hong Kong. Would I be in the second or the first with you guys?
You would be in the second.
I'd be in the second. Hong Kong. Okay, yeah.
Early in the morning.
So what date are we talking about?
In 2 weeks' time, which would be the 1st of February for you, Chad.
My calendar up here. Okay. That's it. That's okay for me.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll have a go at just scheduling that. Just a very narrow agenda, just being to pick up on the discussion. And the aim, Christine and Uta, would be to get a draft out within the next week so that we've got a week's notice.
Okay. So that's fine.
Okay. The other topics on this call then are...
Bruce, can I? I'm just in the queue. I just want to put something under AOB. Can we just return back to? We did propose an RTOR that the council appoint co-chairs or a chair so we could launch work. Can we come back to that under AOB?
Okay, do that. Okay. The next item was just the meeting in February. I think there has been a little confusion perhaps that I've seen on lists, and I think this is worth clarifying it on this call. I think those on the committee on PDP December 05 are pretty clear about the meeting's on and when it is. I think there's probably a bit of less certainty about the February 06. So, Glenn, can you perhaps summarise the state of play around the meeting, and maybe Liz can comment on what's happening with respect to the two PDPs?
Bruce, we have got 16 participants so far. And 3 constituencies have proposed to send 2 representatives so that they can cover both the PDP and the new GTLDs. And I think as it stands, it is the PDP Feb 06 that will start off the meeting, because some participants will not be able to be there, and then we will carry on with the new GTLDs. Is that correct?
No, the other way around, as far as I'm aware.
I thought that was correct.
Okay, well then we should clarify that.
One other thing I'd like to throw into the hopper on this is that the 22nd is also our next meeting of the council. So whoever's got the morning of the 22nd, it's really a council meeting.
Except
what I've suggested on that one, Avrin, I'm not sure whether Glenn has updated that yet,
yes,
is to move the council meeting so that we're not clashing.
Oh,
there.
I hadn't seen that. Sorry.
Yeah.
To the 1st of March. Oh, okay. Sorry, I hadn't seen that.
So push that out by a week. So, yes, my understanding, at least my availability, it's going to be I'm available on the Thursday, Friday to chair the December 05 new GTLD work, mainly with staff involvement to look at operational issues, and that Saturday onwards is available for February 06.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Because there was a lot of confusion about that.
I think we also had some people that were in that same arrangement. So, okay.
And then with respect to February 6th, Avery, so I gather you finalised that you are going to meet, is that correct?
Yes.
That's good, okay.
So that will be then on the Saturday?
Yes.
Okay, so I can send that out.
And let's just be clear, it's Marilyn. I understood that we were closing 2 days.
Yes.
So given we may have confusion, can we just verify we have PDP-05, all day Thursday, all day Friday. We have PDP-06, all day Saturday, and?
I think the intent, Marilyn, just from a resourcing point of view, is that the resources will be available all day Saturday, all day Sunday, extend up to PDP, February 6th, to decide how it wants to use that resource.
I think we were planning that we would take the 2 days, that we would need the 2 days.
Frankly, it's important to know, for those of us who are funding our own travel to this meeting, so we don't continually change the airfare.
Yeah, so Glenn, perhaps if we can just get out some clarity just after this call, perhaps you can just do it with me after the call, but just get a note out just clarifying a very high-level agenda for the 4 days, and then the various chairs will fill in the details.
Yes, which will basically be then the new GTLDs on Thursday and Friday and the PDP-06 on Saturday and Sunday.
That's right, yes.
The hotel space has been booked for that, so there's no problem. And if people would just be so kind as to send me their approval forms for travel.
And Glenn, I just need to clarify, it's possible that a constituency, I understand the funding issue, but it's possible that a constituency would have observers there as well. Have we made provision? Is it feasible for observers to be there, or do we have...
Yes, there is provision for observers.
Okay.
And there will also be extended remote participation possible.
Okay.
I've been working with ICANN technical staff to really make this much, much, much better than we've had before.
Perfect.
And Glenn, can you just clarify the size of the room? Will that be about the same, bigger or smaller than the size of the room we had in Amsterdam?
Bruce, I haven't yet got clarity on that. I've asked for it, but I would say that it will be the size of the room we had in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I think we'd want it at least that size if we have observers. Yep.
Yes, I've asked for one that will take at least 35 people round a U, which is quite a big room to do that, and then have chairs put in on the side.
Right. Okay. Any other questions on the planning? Okay. Who is Task Force? Glenn, do you want to just read out Jordan's comments on that?
Yes, certainly. Here we are. This is Jordan's comments on the Who is Task Force. We've briefly discussed two proposals, one from Avery, Wendy Robin, to eliminate Who is or remove all technical, non-technical contact information, and one proposal from Marilyn with ideas to remove port 43 access, limit bulk Who is, and further study the topic.
And we need to clarify and move web-based access, Glenn, which I noticed was not included in that.
Yes, it's not included in...
Right.
The second point, we've had some further discussions about access to data that might be removed from public view by the task force.
we've begun limiting the options from the 5 presented in the preliminary report. Public comment period just closed, and we've also received several constituency statements. We'll be discussing these next week. The task force call is on Monday. We remain on track for completing our work on February 12, I hope. Jordan.
That sounds ambitious, given that it sounds like there's lots of new proposals popping up. But, okay. And February 6, are we able to give a bit of an update on where that's going?
Yep, okay. So the work on terms of reference item 1 through 4 and 6 are essentially done and will be reflected in an updated draft due 8 February. We organized the schedule that we had to keep the same end dates, but to include the two-day face-to-face in February. So we have a tight schedule between now and then to consider all the issues, and the face-to-face is planned for final discussion and voting to release the report. A near final draft with everything that's been done on Term of Reference 5 will be released before the face-to-face. So the work has started on Term of Reference 5. We're still at the beginning of the discussions and still looking for an understanding of what data is collected by the registries so that it can be categorized. Categories are still under discussion. We're especially dealing with the issue of data which is either has or is linked to personal data, personal information, or data that comes with personal identifiers and such. And we're planning to look at all the specific issues that fall out of that. Now, a part of the problem we've got at the moment is that we don't have a firm grasp on what data is collected. There's certainly the contract-mandated data, but there's also other data that's collected. So we're looking to invite experts on the topic of what data is collected to the next meeting, and I'm in the process of reaching out and hopefully saying it in this meeting is part of that reaching out. We're reaching out to the registries, and we did have some indication from Carey that he would carry that reach out for us. Reaching out to the staff, perhaps the registry liaison, or legal to sort of discuss with us sort of the registry data, its implications, what's collected, et cetera, and also looking to outsiders that can come in with real expert knowledge on what data is collected by registries and how it's dealt with, how it's scrubbed, how it's linked, et cetera. So that's where we are. We still got a lot to discuss on Term of Reference 5. But we got a plan.
Okay, thank you, Avery. Any questions for Avery on PDP 506?
Or acceptance from the staff to be able to send someone to our meeting next week, like registry liaison or legal?
So just restate the requirement, Avery?
Basically, we have our meeting is, what, on the 23rd at, what is it, it's 2 Eastern, I forget where it is, GCC.
It's the same time as the council call.
Oh, okay, same time as the council call. And we're looking for someone from the staff, either from legal or perhaps it would be a good chance to talk to the registry liaison to come to the meeting and basically tell us about registry data and how it's used from the staff perspective. Okay, I'm trying to invite someone from the registry constituency to do the same, and I'm also looking to an outside expert. So during that first hour, we can get some discussion going between people who really know registry data and can say something authoritative about what's collected, how it's used, how personal linkage, personal identifiers are dealt with.
So there's kind of 2 aspects of that. You could get the General Counsel's Office to tell you what's in legal agreements with respect to registry data, which will give you a legal definition. Or are you looking for someone that's going to interpret that a bit more for you and say, in practice, this is what it means? I just want to understand, it's probably a different, because the form is probably something from the General Counsel's Office,
right,
and the latter is more likely to be somebody with the technical background.
Right. I think, you know, largely we could certainly read the contract, but it's always good to have someone from the General Counsel who can tell us that we've understood it or not understood it and clarify. I think that we also need people with the technical background to tell us, in reality, what do they collect? Do they collect things, you know, given the contracts say what you can do and what you can't do, and there's, you know, there's a huge gap between those two of things that one may or may not do that aren't covered by a contract. So we'd like to sort of understand what falls into that space.
Yeah, the letter's a complicated area. I'm not sure that I can even want to sort of stick in the breach and try and answer that.
Well, I think we need to get everyone in the breach. We need to get registries, we need to get staff, and we need to get, you know, it's like a fractured mirror ball. We need, the more perspectives we get, the better idea we've got. At the moment, we're sort of spinning our wheels on that definition, and without having more knowledge on what is collected, you know, and then getting into that subtopic of traffic data, without getting into those discussions with some real knowledge, it's difficult to say, well, do we need a policy to control that, and if so, what? Because it's too amorphous. But it's on our term of reference, so, you know, we really need people that know to pitch in and help us understand more than, you know, the occasional comments of, well, read the contract, it's in there. Yes, but the contract does not define reality. It only defines legal possibility.
All right. Well, John, are you available to have someone from your area just review the various terms around traffic and registry data?
Oh, we certainly we can, and we'll work with the policy team in trying to figure out how to provide some additional information that would support the questions being asked.
Okay. I'll give you a really high-level answer, Avery, on some of the questions you've raised. In the contract, there's a requirement to collect some data that must be escrowed, so it's quite detailed in that area, about the data that must be collected and stored, and that's for both registries and registrars. But then, obviously, there's technical capability in terms of what you can log on systems. So you would understand that you can log incoming requests for either registrations at a registrar level, or you could log incoming DNS queries. And the sort of information you're going to get is basically IP address and how many queries from that IP address, and what the query. But what the content of the query is, in other words, what's that request asking for? That's the sort of information you could collect, but you're probably not required to. That's just kind of giving you a bit of a feel for scope. The contract.
Bruce, could you put Carrie in the queue, please?
Carrie, yep, go ahead.
I was on the call where these questions were raised, and I have a feeling that there's a significant misperception about whose IP address is knowable to the registry when a resolution request is submitted, that there's some belief that the IP address of the end user somehow is propagated all the way to the registry, and that the registry is capable of knowing individually who is asking for resolution of names. And that's simply not true. It's some agent which is asking for this on behalf of some other agent, which may or may not be the one on the desktop, as it were.
Yeah, it's quite commonly going to be an ISP, in other words. It's the IP address you're going to get. Yeah, exactly. You need to understand how DNS resolution works. Yeah. It can be an end user, by the way, but in many cases it's not. Yeah.
Well, I think it's only a minimal fraction of end users who are actually originating and transacting all the way through to the resolution process. So, these are the kinds of issues that need to be clarified. When there's talk of need for expertise and discussion, it's to eliminate the kinds of misperceptions that I suspect we're typifying with this particular one.
Yeah, and that's kind of not typically an ICANN staff thing. I would imagine, Carrie, it's something that you probably need someone that's got a bit of technical knowledge that can give a bit of brief tutorial on how it all works.
Bruce, that's Marilyn. Could you put me in the queue?
Yep, go ahead, Marilyn.
Well, could we just maybe problem solve a little bit more? I think Aubrey gave an excellent overview and talked about the ideas for how to get this expertise and very quickly, you know, get some answers so that then the task force can move on and work. So the options I heard mentioned were the general counsel's office to explain what's said in the contract. That's better than just saying to the task force, go read the contract. That would be, that will speed the process along. So thanks, John. Second question is, since
the guidance that I've heard really it is going to take somebody more than the registry liaison staff. So is this something that a line of CAPIS, for instance, would be a special resource for, or the CSAC chair, or, you know, obviously technical resources from the registries would be, but if they're not, you know, if that's not feasible, what's our other option to do it very quickly in terms of finding somebody who could do it in an hour, you know, do an hour's overview?
Bruce, this is Kurt. Can you put me in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I might disagree with the fact that ICANN staff is not technical, but I do agree with the fact that we don't know how registries use the data. And so what staff could do is coordinate some sort of informational discussion about it. As Carrie stated, I think the registries themselves are most knowledgeable about how the information is used. What information is available could also be provided by registries or independently. But if Chuck and Carrie think it's a good idea, ICANN staff could coordinate among registries how best to provide that information.
Yeah, which I mean, I this is Aubrey, if I can interject. I think that's great. One of the things are we're trying to get this moving as quickly as possible. So if by coordinating you mean bring people to the first hour of our discussion to sort of participate in an open discussion on the issue, I think that would be the most helpful way. You know, the next meeting is on the 23rd, same time slot as this. I'd like to sort of put the first hour at least for, okay, substantive discussion, clear all the air, get as much information out. By the way, I have made an outreach to Lyman. I don't know if he's the right person, but I know him personally, so I did make an outreach to him to join us if he could, or to point to other people. I think having the staff themselves come and bring some of the registry people would be great. Going for an outside meeting of the registry constituency and waiting for the information to come back is less helpful because we've had the request on the table for a long, long time, and now it's just time to do it.
Yeah, so I think what Kurt was offering to do was to have some of the ICANN staff consult with some members of the GNSO community, I'll just put it a bit more broadly, and try and provide a bit of a briefing on the information that, I guess, are you saying information that could be collected? Is that essentially what you're saying, Kurt?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
I appreciate that much. I mean, I appreciate that a lot.
Okay. All right, under any other business, Marilyn, you wanted to go back to the topic of chairs for the working group on reserve names.
I wanted to go back to the idea of having approved the statement of work, set the limitations of time. I would like to ask that the council appoint an initial or interim chair or co-chair so that the meetings, constituencies can begin to identify people, and we can convene an initial meeting and then begin work because we did approve a deadline.
So along that line, we also need to get people to go back to their constituencies and contribute members of the committee, names of members of the committee, in the next weeks max.
In the next week, yeah. So it's one of the benefits on that front, Chuck, is it's fairly open in the sense that I don't see a need for a constituency to elect somebody. It's basically just
right.
Inviting members of a constituency to participate.
But we need some volunteers. So.
Yes, understood. With respect to the chair, I would probably, there's a requirement for an interim chair. And then that interim chair then sort of hosts the first meeting and an election is held. I'm wondering, Chuck, would you be willing to be that interim chair of that group?
I'm afraid you're going to say that.
That was going to be my recommendation, too.
Thanks a lot. I don't want to set any expectations that I can have the time to do it on an ongoing basis, but I'll at least do the interim role, if
anyone else jumping to volunteer?
I'm happy to help Chuck in organizing. Is it helpful to you, Chuck?
Thanks, Marilyn.
Okay, so essentially I just want to be able to have someone that's going to be responsible for kicking it off, and as you say, Chuck, you can think about whether you want to be the ongoing chair. Can we just have a quick motion then to appoint Chuck as interim chair of the working group on reserve names?
Can I ask a question? Since Marilyn volunteered, are we actually suggesting Chuck and Marilyn as co-conveners or did she volunteer to help with it?
My preference would be to have Chuck as the chair,
and let me be clear. I was actually offering to maybe be supporting in a supporting role. I wasn't proposing to co-chair, Bruce.
Okay. Would someone like to then second the nomination of Chuck? That was Avery, was it?
Yep.
All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, you're appointed interim chair, Chuck.
Thanks.
Any other business you want to raise? Okay, at that point then I'll close the meeting and thank everybody for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.